From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I'm Hunter in Texas, and joining me in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado, getting ready to rob a house, is Mr. John Grace. Say hello, John.
Yo.
And joining us from the open-air prison camp of Australia, we have Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Hey, y'all. This place is like a prison.
Before we get started into our topic, you want to show what we got this week and whip out your junk?
Yeah.
All right. Stu, you go first.
All right. Did have a couple of things until about an hour ago when I got package in from Nez. So, it'd be a bit more. So first off, there's this Bruce Lee, Fist of Fury t-shirt I got.
Very nice. Okay.
So in from Nez is The Odd Couple season one.
Hey.
Yeah. The Odd Couple season five, fifth and last season. What else we got? Oh, Welcome Back Cotter season one, which this, Anthony, this thing goes for a fortune. Do you understand how much it goes for?
Yeah, I remember. They didn't release any other sets, did they? I think they just released the first season.
No, they released all four seasons.
Oh, they did.
But those things now individually are a small fortune. And if you're to buy the box set, I think it's about $100 US. Goes for $90 US. So not cheap. But there's that. You sent me Yes, Prime Minister Series 2. Some Japanese film called Kamikaze. I think it's Japanese.
I don't know that one. I would assume it's Japanese with that title.
Yeah. It's probably pro-suicide combat.
No, it looks like it's French. It's got some French names on there.
Michel
Galabru, Dominique Lavanant. But the cool thing is, in there is the disc Kamikaze, but there's a second one, which is... Song of the South. Which I didn't know. And last one, this is very cool. This came out in 2013, then got deleted by Umbrella, then re-released last year. Insists on DVD, Pacific Banana. It's an Australian sex comedy from 1980. It's pretty much the last of the sex comedies done by John Lomond, known as the sort of filth monger of Australian movies from the 70s and 80s. Stars Graham Blundell, who was Alvin Purple, obviously. Robin Stewart from Bless His House, who played the son. And Deborah Gray, beautiful Deborah Gray.
So that director's not as classy as Bruce Beresford, right?
No, or... No, he's not. But he makes
Weir.
Fun.
He's no Peter Weir.
Yeah.
He's a smart monger. He goes, I don't care.
Yeah. You know,
there's no expectations put on me with my film, so who cares?
Because didn't Bruce start out making those kinds of movies, like the Alvin Purple stuff? Wasn't that Beresford?
I think that was Tim Burstall, actually.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, it's Tim Burstall. He was respected years later, I think, or made respectable stuff.
Yeah. But Beresford... I would have to look up because you got me thinking now, but I think Tim Burstall's name is attached to Alvin Purple.
Oh, no, he did Barry McKenzie. I'm thinking of with...
Right. There you go.
That horny Australian comedy.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I was getting confused with. And then he goes on to do Driving Miss Daisy and King David.
Yeah.
It's Richard Gere.
Richard Gere. Oh, Lord.
And he did, Breaker Morant? That was a good
one. No, that was pretty, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
When it came out over here.
I never seen that, and I heard it's a pretty damn good movie.
Breaker Morant's a good movie. Yeah.
I gotta check it out.
Yeah, it's really good. Don't see too many movies about the Boer War, you know?
Right.
No.
Australia moved away. Never seen Gallipoli.
Yeah, Gallipoli. See, I was going to say, since Gallipoli came out in, what was it, John, 81?
Yeah, 81.
Yeah, since Gallipoli then started moving, the Australian film started moving away from the, you know, sort of sex comedies.
The fun stuff.
All the fun stuff.
Bloody action. And the,
you went to Gallipoli into Breaker Morant, into stuff like, what was that? Oh, shit. The Odd Angry Shot. But I think that was earlier in the 70s with Graham Kennedy.
Yeah, that was like 79, I think. Odd Angry Shot. 19. I have that on Blu-ray.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm supposed to review that for a website or magazine about 6 years ago. I'm still going to write the review. Turn it in.
It's coming. It's coming. Yeah.
Although we can always cover it on the show if you want to, because I think it's a pretty good movie.
Yeah, it's not on Blu-ray here. I've never seen it.
Yeah, Synapse released it in this country.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. But that's it for me.
All right, John, what about you?
I got something. I actually got it in the mail a few weeks ago, but finally opened it, started watching it last night. It's called The Good Life. It is
a British show?
Yeah, yeah. 1975 British sitcom. Over in the U.S., it was aired under the title Good Neighbors on our PBS stations, apparently. I was just, I had never heard of it. Came across it as a recommendation from Amazon UK and looked into it. I said, I'll check it out. And bought it for a good deal and started the first episode last night. I was absolutely stunned. This has to be the first sitcom I've watched where the characters are intelligent. They're not buffoons. They're actually funny because they're so smart and they're kind of outwitting each other in a strange way. But it's surprisingly well-written, very well-acted. I'm looking forward to watching more of it when we're done recording and, dig into the second episode. But I like it so far. I think it's pretty good. Region 2, of course, for our American, for the few listeners that care about checking out British sitcoms of the 70s. It's been sort of my thing.
You know, it's good that it's Region 2, though, because it gets people up their ass to go and get a region free play. In 2022, you should have one by now. There's no excuse.
Yeah, you absolutely must have one. You just, forget about it.
God, we got a player here, a company here that has a player out there. The company's called Laser. They're like a lower-end model, but it plays every region DVD out of the box. You can change the Blu-ray regions. It even tells you in a piece of paper inside the box how to do it.
Right.
Yeah, so there's no excuse.
Yeah, exactly.
None.
Yeah.
All right, so for me, it's a light week. I just have one thing. I got this from Kino, Journey to Shiloh, starring James Caan. It's also got... it's written by Gene Kuhn, and it's also got what's his name, Harrison Ford in it, and Jan Michael Vincent, and it was made in 1968. Wow. It's a Western.
Wow,
that's so it's cool. A pre-stardom Jimmy Caan. Really.
Oh yeah, he's got top billing, but it's one of these kind of crossroads of old Hollywood and new Hollywood, I guess, movies. Yeah. But I just saw it on the shelf. I was going through a movie trading company, and I went, well, this looks like a gem, so I picked it up.
Know.
And it's about like guys kind of on their way to fight for the South at the Battle of Shiloh or something, So yeah, it looks like it's pretty good. Don Stroud is in it. But yeah, I saw a screenplay by Gene Kuhn. I went, all right.
All those Star Trek scripters, I think, had pretty busy film work.
Yeah, he was one of the main writers on the original Star Trek series.
Is that the movie trading company that we went to, the one near your old place, or is there another one?
There's another one closer to where I am now. It's not as big as the one where I took you. That's the best one. That's the flagship. Yeah. But there's one a little closer to me. It's a little more convenient. But I still go to that one when I can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
But yeah, so the movie we're talking about this week is new to me. I had never heard of the Carry On series of films. I know Stu's eyes just
heard
got
of it.
Huge. Never heard of it. This was uncharted territory, blind spot for me. And the movie we're looking at today is Carry On Cowboy from 1965. starring Sidney James, Kenneth Williams, Jim Dale, Charles Hawtrey. And yeah, so this kind of blindsided me. Has this been something y'all been wanting to talk about for a while?
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely actually funny because the listeners are probably thinking, oh, Stuart's picked another one. No, actually, this was John's idea to go with the Carry On movie. And we were talking just after last week's recording, and we were up in the air about Carry On Screaming or Carry On Cowboy. And then we decided, well, Carry On Cowboy has Sid James. And while Carry
didn't
On
didn't
want to
do Carry On Emmanuel.
Yeah,
I can't get through that
good.
One.
I'll get into all the Carry Ons. I'll get into the Carry
I was looking at the other ones and I went, Carry On Emmanuel, is that a serious thing or is it like a porno spinoff?
Oh, that was the tale. That's literally classed as the real last Carry On film from 78. There is Carry On Columbus from 91, I think it is. And it's known as the absolute stinker in the series. And the Carry On films do have some not so good ones. Carry On Columbus is, I saw it in the theaters and I went with my brother and I think I made it 2 hours and we were slow.
So what's the story behind this series? It's a movie series. It's not a TV series, but it's wildly prolific.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
a lot of these.
They'll crank in sometimes two of these out a year. They got to more towards the sort of 60s. They started just putting out one a year. But in the early days, because this is 65, and I think this is the 11th Carry On film by then. And they started this series, if I'm not mistaken, in 56, was it, John? 57?
Yeah, it's like in the mid-50s. It was like a dramedy of sorts, I think, when it started.
Mm. I see 58 yeah. on Wikipedia.
That's about correct.
So they cranked out 10 movies in 7 years before this one. So they'll knock them two out a year. And as John mentioned, they are sort of dramedies, the early ones. John, remind me, what were the early ones? Were they made by Warner Brothers or Rank? Rank Arena?
I think they were made by Rank, and they were basically producer Pete Rogers, sort of his project, and the director, what's his name, is Gerald Thomas?
Yeah,
Gerald Thomas.
He directed like most or all of them, I believe. And it started out as like dramedy, and then I think the audience responded real well to the comedic aspects, and they sort of increased. It turned into a spoof series. It evolved into that. They were good at reading the audience and seeing what they wanted. And I would guess, basically from watching like documentaries and such about it, that it was probably the most popular British comedy series of all time. I mean,
yeah, without a doubt. Yeah.
And they're mildly known in the U.S. If people grew up in big cities, they may have aired on television, like on UHF channels. But it was sort of like, it's still very obscure and unknown to most U.S. viewers. Some baby boomers might remember them.
Yeah, yeah. I'd never even heard of these. Like, these completely missed me.
Mm. I'm stunned that you had never even heard of. Not seen, I can understand, but not even heard of.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I mean, if you were to live over here and say you'd never heard of a Carry On, you'd be like, what? You know, they are very, very popular here still.
Oh, very still?
Popular. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, they still get a frequent run on television.
And they've got the same stable of actors in most of the movies, right?
Yeah.
Like, I noticed Sid James, you know, I saw that he was a mainstay. And he kind of reminds me of what Leslie Nielsen would become later, like kind of plays it straight, but
he's
really funny. Like, yeah. I love the opening of this movie where he walks into town. It's like Fistful of Dollars or something. And he walks up and these three dudes walk up and he just shoots all of them. And he goes, I wonder what they wanted.
Yeah. But you did have your mainstays in here. Sid James would drift in and out of the series. Because he was involved with Hancock's Half Hour on television as well. So his availability will determine whether he could be in the film or not.
And he's funny, but that guy could have been a tough guy actor and you would have taken him seriously.
He started out as that.
Yeah.
He started out in crime films and Hammer movies and such as like in straight roles.
He could have been like a Gene Hackman type or something, you know?
Oh, yeah. For sure. It's just that he had the ability to be funny as well as straight, you know, straight dramatic actor.
Yeah.
But, I think comedy suits Steve James more. He's, you know, you've only got to see him in Bless His House to know that he's a very, very funny individual. And also all the carry-ons. But I think Bless His House is really where he shines the most.
Mm. Yeah, we watched that on an episode.
Yeah, we did that a number of years back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, that is a series to get your hands on from the UK.
Yeah, it's very funny.
John, have you got that series yet?
I've got the entire box set. I'm about halfway through it. So yeah. there was a routine where I was in where I was watching an episode a night, and then I kind of fell off of it. And I want to get back into it and watch the movie, which was a Hammer Films release, by the way. But and watch the film version and watch how the series ended out. I don't think it ended till he died or something. Like, it was so popular.
Yeah. I know he died on stage. Like, literally died on stage, just dropped dead.
That's how you want to go.
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, Kenneth Williams was more the mainstay actor in the 31 films. I mean, 31 being the last, being Carry On Columbus, which he already passed on by then in 88. But of the 30 films that were available to him, he did 26. So he's about the most prolific of the lot. Some of the others would drift, like Charles Hawtrey, who played the the Indian chief, Big Heap, in this. He eventually got thrown off that carry-on trip in 72 due to his severe alcoholism and just a very unpleasant person as well.
So he wasn't acting in this movie.
No, when he was drunk in this, he was probably drunk as a skunk for real.
Like, he's like demanding fire water and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they had a temporary star breakout of the series, and they actually tried to make him a star in America. It was Jim Dale,
mm-hmm.
because Disney signed a deal with him, and they did some comedy westerns and the original Pete's Dragon. And they always emphasized Jim Dale being in the film. They were really trying to turn him into a Disney star when Disney specialized in live action comedies and such in the 70s. You know, unlike the live action comedies they make today that are called superhero movies, but you know,
stuff like with the movies they made with Sandy Duncan, like
$1 million
Duck,
that thing, like they owned the family matinee business back in the 70s, and Jim Dale was one of their stars. That
they all had who's the guy who would be in all the Disney comedies? He was in like
Ken,
you know,
Berry or Ken.
What's his name? He was in like the Ugly Dachshund.
Dean Jones
was in all those movies. I love Jim Dale,
they were trying to turn into a, like another Dean Jones type.
And Jim Dale still alive, by the way.
He's one of the last. Him and Angela Douglas, who plays Annie Oakley in this, she's still alive. The rest were both, you know, Sid James gone, Joan Sims, Kenneth Williams, Charles Hawtrey, Peter Butterworth. They're all moved on.
You know, I'm also seeing here that Jim Dale narrated the Harry Potter audiobooks, so I don't like him anymore.
Hey, gotta keep working.
Yep. Yep. Hey,
Hot Lead and Cold Feet was not a franchise at Disney. So
yeah. Digby, the biggest dog in the world. This has got to be a Disney movie.
Yeah. No.
No, it's British. It's British.
A British attempt at doing a Disney movie.
The biggest howl ever unleashed. It's got, oh man.
That's Boris Johnson right now.
That one looked like a Disney movie, but you know, Bob Crane did one of those Disney movies too.
Oh boy.
You know, probably in between making like homemade porno films with
Contrary to what the Schrader film implied, it was actually a hit.
Yeah, the Schrader film made it look like he was, you know, that was like an embarrassment or something. Even though this is a very good movie, it's kind of like in Hollywoodland when everybody's laughing when George Reeves is on the screen. They're like, "Oh, it's Superman!" It's like,
yeah,
no. Like, it reinforces this myth that you like were incapable of doing movies if you did television, you know?
Yeah.
Autofocus is a good film. I like that.
Oh, I liked Autofocus. I watched it with my mother-in-law, who actually met Bob Crane. She went to go see him at one of those dinner theater things and said he was very flirty.
So, oh, really? The hell you say? Who would have thought?
Yeah. But yeah. So we watched it with her, and you know, it's a little R-rated to be watching with your mother-in-law, but you know, it was just interesting since she met him. You know, here's a movie about him getting murdered.
Yeah.
He's speaking of with Bob Crane, Sid James was very much a ladies man.
Really?
Very much.
Oh yeah. I can see that.
Oh yeah. Very well known. I mean, he was married the whole time, but I mean, his affair with Barbara Windsor was not, everyone knew about it. It was no secret.
I see here he was married 3 times, so.
And also would take some of these carry-on gigs because his gambling was just out of control. He was just losing money hand over fist.
Oh, so he's like, what's his name? Chico Marx.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Like Chico, yeah.
Sid needed the money.
He needed the money.
Yeah, no, some of these he just took because he didn't like the script. He did like Carry On Cowboy. I think he was gone on record saying was his favorite.
Well, I can see that. I mean, the gags in this are pretty well crafted, very well thought out. You know, there's a lot of great word gags, and you know, I just love that it shoots three guys. I wonder what they want.
Yeah, it's probably the first spoof of Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah. Yeah,
it might be the first, because a lot of comedians and comedy shows and movies have spoofed that opening scene, and this may have been the first film to actually satirize it.
And you know what? Let me ask you guys this, because when I watched this movie predates Blazing Saddles by nearly a decade.
Yeah,
and the plot is, minus the race stuff, is virtually the same.
Yeah,
Mel Brooks. You know, Mel Brooks
is about this. This town's got this crime problem. They send in a patsy who's supposed to clean up, but he's not meant to clean up. And
yeah,
you know, and it's you know, instead of it being a black guy, it's just a kind of a cucky white guy, you know, who's a sanitation expert named,
yeah,
you know.
But yeah, I'll guarantee you Mel Brooks was watching these films. Any money?
Yeah, no, I just was, when I watched it, I went, this is very similar in terms of plot. It's just Western stuff. The plot's the same, you know.
A lot of people will declare war on me after I say this, but I think it's actually superior to Blazing Saddles.
I knew John was going to say that.
Yeah, because, and I'll tell you why, it's made by people who actually like Westerns.
Yeah, no.
I was never convinced Mel Brooks enjoyed Westerns when I watched Blazing Saddles.
No, when you watch Blazing Saddles feels like an attack on Westerns, honestly. It feels like he's calling them racist or something. It kind of is a movie that, you know, people have this conception of Westerns as being movies people watch because they like watching Indians get killed or something, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because they, you know, that's how they that they act like the movies are just these black and white morality tales where Indians get massacred and, you know.
Yeah, they're anti-Indian.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
And the cowboys sing and play guitar.
Yeah, and John Wayne talks about white supremacy or something. You know?
Yeah. Waves the American flag. Like,
yeah, while he does it.
And, right.
And explains how great America is to an Asian kid, you know, after he's just burned a village down in Vietnam.
Right.
But
listen to the theme song of Carry On Cowboy, and then listen to the theme song from Blazing Saddles. Yes, Blazing Saddles one's a bit more upbeat and has the big Frankie Valli vocals, but they're kind of similar.
Yeah.
Well, Mel Brooks likes to claim he's the first guy to do fart jokes in a movie and all that nonsense. Well, I watched Carry On Jungle, and that has all the jokes Mel Brooks claims he was the first to show on screen in the 70s, and there they are in a 1968 Carry On film.
Yeah.
So he was just stealing from these guys.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of things first, that carry on. A lot of things that carry on did first before anybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, they even talk about Carry On Nurse, which is the second one, which is not really that funny, but the ending of that film got a lot of flack in the British press.
The British press said is negative, Stu.
I know. I hate to break it to everyone, but yeah.
I've never seen a less hostile country.
They're so tranquil in their coverage. Their media is so nice.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah, but no, the end of Carry On Nurse, which is the second Carry On film from 59. For those who have seen that film and know the ending of it, it caused a bit of stink, that's for sure. And it's a harmless ending, but it in 59, I can understand why people got upset about it. So they were sort of breaking ground back then. And yeah, I mean, those early ones, as I mentioned earlier, were very, very mild. It was pretty much with this one, with Carry On Cowboy. Carry On Cleo, if you've got that list up in front of you, Hunter, was about 63, 64.
Carry On Cleo is 64.
Okay, so that would have been what, the one or two before this one, was it? Before Carry On Cowboy?
Carry On Cleo is the one just before Carry On Cowboy.
Right. So Cleo, they started getting a bit more sort of, you know, dangerous of what they could get, or trying to push the envelope and see what they can get away with. And Carry On Cowboy was a big hit. Big, big hit. So was Carry On Screaming, the one after this, which I think is the better film. And as time went on, by the time you got to around sort of 68, 69, with sort of Carry On Doctor, Carry On Girls, they were just, everything had gone out the window. It was like, okay, well, these are basically now just sort of, sex comedies. And it's all, everything's double entendre comedy by that time. But still very funny. I think they were hysterical. I think those later ones from Carry On Cleo onwards up into, including what's the one from 72? Is it Carry On
Abroad?
Abroad's very funny. Carry On Abroad. And what's the one in 73?
Carry On Girls.
Yeah, okay, that one. 74 is Carry On England, is it?
Carry On Dick.
That's a good one as well. That's actually really good. Shit, I forgot all about Carry On Dick with Sid James's Dick Turpin. Yeah, that's a good one.
And then there's Carry On Behind.
What's Carry On England?
Carry On England is 76.
Okay, Carry On England and Carry On Emmanuel from 78 are not good.
Yeah, and then the last one's Carry On Columbus.
Yeah. So up to and including later. Carry On Behind. Jeez, I remember that one. I've seen them all. For sure, but I'd have to even see what the synopsis was of that one.
One about Henry VIII called Carry On Henry. Oh.
Yeah.
And it's got Sid James holding a giant axe. I have to see this.
History teacher Hunter suddenly wants to see a Carry On film.
Oh, Sid James plays Henry VIII as a lovable rogue.
Yeah, I got to watch that with myself.
Oh.
But Carry On Cleo, I would say, is probably the luckiest production ever, because what happened was Cleopatra was filming, I think, at Pinewood or one of the British studios. And then the one with the Liz Taylor and Richard Burton, and then they abandoned those studio sets, moved it to Italy or wherever the hell they filmed it, and spent way too much money. So before they tore those sets down, they let the carry-on crew come in and film their Cleopatra spoof on the sets that Fox built.
They pulled it with Spanish Dracula. That's all they did.
Yeah, that is very lucky. Oh man, yeah, that's a nice bit of trivia right there, that they used the abandoned Cleopatra sets.
Yeah, you never hear about those great success stories of such celluloid theft these days.
No, you just hear about that Cleopatra nearly killed Fox or Warner, whoever it was Fox.
Right. Yeah, I think it was Fox. It's a Fox thing, which I've never sat through it. Although George MacDonald Fraser, the writer who created Flashman, Harry Flashman, those novels. He wrote a book about Hollywood and history, and he said, just based on historical records, you can't really say that Anthony wasn't exactly Sid James. He said he may very well have been more than Richard Burton. So it's a funny thing to contemplate.
Yeah. But they had a lot of those other ones in there as well, like Carry On Up the Khyber. Which, what's that one? That's about the British invasion of India?
Or
the
British it's during their colonization. I've seen that one. And might be the most popular one in England. Because I know some British film critic in the Sight and Sound poll of the best movies of all time put that in his top 10 just to piss people off. But he said he loved it. He said it's the ultimate carry-on film. So it's got that type of following. And I noticed when I saw Austin Powers 2, The Spy Who Shagged Me, they had that gag with the shadows in the tent of Austin and
whatever.
That's from Carry On from that movie.
That's from Carry On Camping, I think.
Right. Yeah, that was completely lifted from Carry On Camping, because that was the first Carry On film I saw. And because I got a region free DVD player, I finally bought one in 99 and got a region free one, of course. And a friend had a bunch of UK DVDs he couldn't play on his player, so he brought them over or loaned them to me, and I watched Carry On Camping and totally got into the Carry On series.
There's so many in that series, and there's Carry On, Follow That Camel, Carry On, Don't Lose Your Head. I just look over the titles and go, wow, I forgot all about it. Carry On Dick that Hunter mentioned, I forgot all about that one, and it's actually really funny as well. So there's a lot of goodness in those Carry On films. Not all, but a lot. Quite, for a series that's 31 films, there's probably about 25 really good ones in there, really funny ones that you'll get something out of at least. And Carry On Cowboy is one of them. It's been a number of years since I watched it. And I would like to know, Hunter, what your thoughts are, having not even heard of this series.
I didn't really know what to expect going into this, because y'all were just like, hey, let's do the Carry On films. And you start throwing out all these titles. And I was like, Carry On, it's this, you know, what's going on? Carry On. There's one that's about a cowboy, and then there's one where they're screaming. You know, so I was kind of going, okay, you know, so I didn't know. I didn't look it up. I just went, I'm just going to jump naked into the pool, you know, you know, and see what happens. And, you know, it starts off, it's like, Carry On Cowboy. And I see all these British names. And I'm going, Doctor Who is in this? John Pertwee? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going, okay, this is a British Western. So immediately my suspicions were raised. I was like, something's going to happen. So you get that typical Western opening, and he shoots those people. And he goes, wonder what they wanted. You know, so it just, that was a good, like, because going in not knowing this was a comedy or anything, you know, and getting that was like, okay, that's pretty good. And, you know, I loved all the gags with, like, the, you know, John Pertwee's that sheriff who's blind.
and deaf.
And, you know, you got the judge who's like, you know, like Sid James opens that den of vice in the town, and he's really upset about, you know, the dancing girls and the naked art and stuff. You know, it's just, you know, it wasn't like, it didn't really have like a narrative where you're like gripped or anything, but it was really I really admired how, you know, I like movies where they tell good jokes, and the jokes are good, and they subvert your expectations. They kind of, you know, it's good kind of, you set up, build, and then you kind of flip the script. They do that a lot, and it's really well done. And I was watching it going, these are a bunch of really talented comedians I've never heard of, just firing on all cylinders. I definitely enjoyed it. It was pretty funny. But the whole time I was watching it, I went like, when did this come out related to Blazing Saddles? Cause I'm willing to guess Blazing Saddles nipped a thing or two from this.
Most definitely. So that's the thing as well, with you watching this, you basically didn't know anybody in the film besides John Pertwee.
John Pertwee was the only name I'd heard of. I Sid James looked familiar. I feel like I've seen him in something, because I
saw him at Wes's house.
Yeah.
Yes, that's where I'd seen him. So I went, I recognized that guy. But I was going, I need to look and see if this guy was a tough guy actor, because he could sell that too, as well as being funny.
John, what's the name of that film he did back with Alec Guinness back in the 50s?
Did he do The Lady Killers? Was he in that?
I think he might have been.
I know he did some Ealing comedies or some Ealing films.
I think he was in Lavender Hill Mob.
Oh yeah, he probably was in that. I haven't seen
that. That's an outstanding film. That is one to watch.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I have an Ealing box set that I want to dig into and start watching, and I'm sure I'm going to see Sid in a few straight roles there.
You said Lavender Hill Mob.
Yep.
Yes, he was in that.
Yeah, he plays on TCM every now and then.
Yeah. Granted, he's not the main star of it. That is Sir Alec Guinness is the main. And that ending of Lavender Hill Mob is just freaking outstanding. Oh, I won't say what it is, but holy shit. It's a great film nonetheless.
Oh, he was also in Quatermass too.
Yeah, he's in that. He's a reporter in that, I believe.
Yeah.
But, he's got a face you don't forget. I mean, once you've seen him, you remember him.
Oh, here's another movie. Never mind. No, I didn't see this. I saw the 39 Steps, but he was not in the Hitchcock one. It was a different one.
Yeah. He did do a lot of television as well.
Yeah.
He did, Hancock's Half Hour. Bless his house. He had, it was the Sid James Show as well. Nesbitt pointed me towards something. I think it was the Sid James Show, but I went to order on Amazon, but it was gone, deleted off it. And now his cash was a small fortune. So he was pretty prolific. He was always doing something. And he was even involved in radio back in the 50s on the Hancock's Half Hour before it became a television show, along with Kenneth Williams, who was on Hancock's Half Hour. And Williams. I've read Kenneth Williams' book called Just Williams. And listen to the audiobook back when they were a thing, back on tapes back in the 80s. And he speaks quite fondly of the Carry On films. Although there were times on the sets where he was miserable and not happy. And but Carry On Cowboy, he speaks quite fondly of. And he said during production of that film, he had a case of lockjaw so bad every day from having his mouth askew to be the judge in this film, that he basically had to go home every night and wrap a towel around his head to straighten his jaw out every day. So, yeah.
Well, the funny thing was they were doing those American accents, and there's a radio, an episode of the radio version of Hancock's Half Hour or Hancock's Radio Show, whatever it was called, where they were all doing American accents. And Kenneth Williams was doing the voice that he did in Carry On Cowboy, going, "Hey, we're Americans. We went, give me a beer." Because when Brits do American accents, they make us all sound like we're in from Connecticut or something.
Yeah.
And talking through our nose.
And a big thumbs down to that clown on Amazon who gave this film a 1-star rating for the Blu-ray review because I can't stand the American accents. It's a film. What are you going to do, a Western in England? It's, you know.
He gives 1-star reviews to Henry Cavill movies because he has an American he's using an American accent. You know,
he must be 1-star reviews to pretty much every film because someone's doing an accent somewhere every, in the film most times.
Every male lead in Hollywood is British.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Australian.
Like, isn't Christian Bale British?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Didn't you know that?
I did, but I just forgot because, you know, I don't think about him that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
if you watch him. I mean, what's that film he did with Nolan? Not Batman. The other one.
The Prestige.
The Prestige. That's him. That's a little Christian Bale. Yeah. And because you think because he had that massive rant on Terminator Salvation when it was in an American accent, the thing is American, but he's British.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. Which is just stupid. Idiotic.
I thought I always held the belief the cinematographer had it coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I believe so.
He probably was being a pain, you know?
Christian has to sit there and pretend he's fighting a robot or something. Yeah. It's got to be tough. Breaks your concentration like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
McG sounds so nervous trying to keep him calm.
What's what happens when you get a hack filmmaker to try and take control of a situation? They don't know what the hell they're doing.
Hey, that
That's
offspring.
All they got in Hollywood now. It's just all hacks.
That offspring, that Pretty Fly for a White Guy video, though, that he did, solid. Mm. You know, that Why Don't You Get a Job video?
You millennials.
God. Yeah. Some people are just meant to be music video directors, and that's it. That's all their capabilities are.
Sure, sure. Yeah, there's plenty of music video directors who have, you know, they try, like, they do a film, and it's like, you know, you can make something that looks cool, but you can't tell a story.
Yeah.
Like, what was it? The guy who did Crow, City of Angels? Like, that was his only movie. But, you know, he did a lot of, like, pretty famous music videos, you know?
Right.
What's the verdict on Spike Jones?
Oh, just Spike Jones he's well respected as a director of movies, you know, in the press.
What's his name as a music video? David Fincher. I mean, he made the leap.
He made the leap. Michael Bay.
Russell Mulcahy.
Russell Mulcahy is like the OG. Mulcahy, so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex Proyas. Maybe. What's his name? There's a bunch of those from the 80s. There's some that were successful. But I feel like in the 80s, that generation of music video director, like Bay, Fincher, Proyas, Mulcahy, transitioned to film. Zack Snyder was also a music video director.
Oh, okay.
He did like Soul Asylum videos and stuff, but I feel like the 90s guys, particularly late 90s guys, struggled to move over to movies because, you know, like what, Joseph Kahn? Like, what he did Torque and Detention?
Because their idea of movies was growing up watching Star Wars on videotape over and over again.
Yeah, it didn't seem like the people directing like Korn and Limp Bizkit videos were...
No, they don't count.
We're coming over to film. And it took like Sam Bayer, you know, he did some huge music videos and he didn't come to film until he did the remake of Friday the 13th.
Nightmare on Elm Street. Huh?
Nightmare on Elm Street. That's what I meant. I'm sorry. That was Marcus Nispel did Friday the 13th, another 90s music video director.
Yep.
Another hack.
Yeah. He did like spider webs for No Doubt and stuff like that.
That's where the studios find their yes men as music videos.
Yeah.
You know, the video directors, music video directors of the 80s were basically, they were all imitating John Carpenter. Mm-hmm. And some of them admitted that. And because I read that oral history of MTV, and a lot of the directors said, yeah, we were trying to get a John Carpenter look because Escape from New York was like the biggest influence on music videos for the way they look. Because it was shot at night, they were using the gel lighting, and that's every music video. So,
all right.
In the 80s.
What's the verdict on this music video director? He does the music, but he's also a director. What's the verdict on Rob Zombie?
Huh? Yeah, he did do his own videos, right?
Yeah.
Hey, that Thunderkiss 65 video is cool.
It is. Yeah. That's what I mean. He's really good at doing videos. I think he did Dragula as well.
Dragula, video. Dragula video is cool.
When he's just being a monster kid, he's fine. When he's trying to be Toby Hooper, that's when I can't get into him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
we've gone
quiet on the monsters lately, haven't we? I mean, we've been away for a month.
No news.
Hey, guys, let's go pull up, you know, the internet. Let's find some monsters news to obsess over. I actually like Rob Zombie's music videos quite a bit. Like, you know, Living Dead Girl, he's doing Caligari. You know, it's just, you know, a lot of it's just him being, like you said, a monster kid having a good time. And even like a movie like House of a Thousand Corpses is kind of just a music video, you know?
Yeah.
You know? But you know, what the guy can't tell a story.
Hang on a second. What about this? What about his next film after The Monsters? He does, wait for it. All right. Hear me out. Carry On Dragula. Huh? Yeah.
Let's do it.
He goes to the Carry On franchise. He's going to revive that.
Revive that. And he'll have a, you know,
Sherry Moon is Angela Douglas, even though she's not even close to
go get Tyler Mane in there and Dan Roebuck and who else does he Bill Moseley.
To get all the double entendre jokes, you can have like Dracula, like a gay Dracula with AIDS, and he puts like condoms on his fangs and he says, "I'm in a safe sucks now."
Oh man.
Actually, you can call the film Carry On Motherfucker. What about that, huh?
Yeah.
That's probably a lyric in one of his songs.
Probably well, it will be if it's not by now.
Somebody send him a Carry On box set. Maybe he'll make it.
Oh, I'll bet you he's got it.
He probably is. Probably watched him.
Oh yeah.
They're the little comedy secret, I think, of a lot of filmmakers, and especially Mike Myers. He never professed his love of Carry On.
It's because I think they nick so many gags from it, they don't want you to know about it.
Right.
You know, like if you watch this movie, you'll go, well, shoot, Mel Brooks was mining this thing. You know,
he was.
You go, oh, shoot, Mike Myers was mining this thing. You know, like it's a little secret mine that people in America don't know that well.
They don't. No, they really don't. I mean, go to a person today of, say, 25. To 30 and say, what's your favorite Carry On? Never seen a Carry On? What the hell is a Carry On?
Tradition is dying, Stu.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's completely dying out.
Well, in movies, like a lot of movies, it's like they're just redoing Avengers or whatever. Like they're retreading whatever thing. And then you ask the director what his influences are, and it's like, well, you know, I was trying to make this like Blade Runner or The French Connection, or I was watching a lot of Buñuel and Tarkovsky. You know, they give these high, but really it's whatever they're not telling you.
Yeah.
It's like John Favreau in Iron Man 2 going, when Tony Stark's playing with that globe, I was inspired by Blow Up. I was like, oh yeah, I thought I'm going to take this and I'm going to put it into an Iron Man. Fuck, piss off. Yeah.
The Iron Man 2 was a better adaptation of Atlas Shrugged than the Atlas Shrugged movies, though. You know,
yeah, it's at least watchable. Just wasn't going to get that Breitbart praise.
Yeah, I remember going, hey, this is like an Ayn Rand screed. No wonder Jon Favreau was protecting Gina Carano. You know, Mandalorian, he probably agrees with her.
Oh, he probably does.
Yeah.
John, eBay chefs. You know, right. Real quick, though, Jon Favreau knows to keep his mouth shut because he made Chef, and that film predates what we now call cancel culture, before that term, I guess.
Really?
But people getting canceled.
Oh,
but people getting kangaroo courted on Twitter was just becoming a thing. And that movie's about a chef who gets canceled and starts a food truck. And so
I want to see this.
I got to check that out.
Yeah, and so, yeah, like he gets humiliated online, and so he kind of decides, well, he's kind of a semi-famous chef. I think the movie is about him leaving Marvel to go make a smaller movie. Really?
Now I want to see it. How
I
dare
do.
You?
Yeah.
How dare you make me want to watch another Jon Favreau movie?
I liked it when I saw it. I remember thinking, oh, it's a charming little movie. But so Favreau, I think, you know, he made that film. I think he knows to keep his mouth shut because he smelled the power of the internet to ruin people over tiny things early on in the early days of Twitter.
Yeah.
I wish Favreau had kept making films with Vince Vaughn. Those two together were just fantastic.
Yeah.
Swingers and Maid were just so good. I think these days I enjoy Swingers a lot. I think Maid's the funnier movie.
Yeah, and we all know that it Vince is. Vaughn is not exactly a Hollywood type in his thinking.
No, not at all.
That picture of him and Mel at that awards show.
Mel, like you can
I need
see
that
Mel
t-shirt.
Perform. Oh, you could just see but... you could see Mel performing for the camera, going.
Yeah,
like just going. Oh, the camera's cutting to me. I need to look like I'm intrigued, and Vince just is like
that death stare. Yeah.
Does that, anything that, sum up us against them more than that photo?
Oh, yeah.
In the current awful Hollywood where, I mean, let's face it, movies are dead. It's just nobody's admitting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When goddamn Spider-Man saves the industry, the theatrical business, it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I have not seen, by the way.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah. I haven't seen it. My kids went and saw it, but I just dropped them off and picked them up after the film. I could not sit through a 2.5 hour Spider-Man film. No.
You mean you don't like movies where every character sounds the same? Like Joss Whedon, they're all smarmy and have no they're all full of jokes and one-liners and zingers and sarcastic comebacks.
And they make references to stuff from our generation. Hey man, who are you? Kurt Loder? You know.
Kurt Loder.
I tried watching like the Joss Whedon TV crap like back in the 90s, like Buffy. I was like, why does every character talk like Fletch?
Yeah.
Like every character is a smart ass. Doesn't matter who they are.
Cheerleader, yeah, everybody.
Jock. Everybody's got one-liners. They're witty. It's just stupid. I can't deal with this.
He doesn't have any sense of character. You know?
No,
RIP Johnny Z.
Oh, yeah. Johnny Z. Yeah. Brought us Metallica, King's X, Anthrax.
And a lot of Eddie Trunk stories.
Hey, me and Johnny Z.
We signed Ace because of him.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He brought us the Alcoholic Ace solo album.
Which I do like that Freely's Comet first one a lot. The second one,
Megaforce put out like Trouble Walking, right?
I don't know if it was him or Atlantic. I don't know. I'd be lying if I bet Trouble Walk. I'm not too sure. The first two, I definitely know.
Trouble Walk.
It could be Megaforce, but Atlantic's ringing a bell.
Yeah, Trouble Walking was Megaforce and Atlantic. So,
well, I know is Eddie Trunk got run off the road because he was playing that out loud in his car stereo.
Yeah, you know, he was listening to Kiss, and so people ran him off the road. Yep. They didn't like rock music.
Yeah, they were like fans or Journey.
There were a bunch of that. Really, Eddie Trunk is racist against Italians because they were probably disco listeners.
Just like that Detroit Rock City, that scene where they take on the Guidos.
Yeah,
it was inspired by Eddie Trunk's life. I'm sure.
Kiss will never make a disco song.
No, never.
They weren't running Eddie Trunk off the road because he was listening to Kiss. They were doing a public service and trying to run Eddie Trunk off the road to get rid of Eddie Trunk.
They said he's going to be an annoying DJ one day.
Yeah, he could have been listening to Supertramp. He wouldn't have cared.
He probably was. He pretends he was listening to Saxon or UFO.
They went, that guy drops a lot of names on the radio. Let's get him.
Yeah. Does he even drive a car? I don't know. I don't know if I believe that.
Who knows? Did you see?
Come to my house and catalog my CDs. Hey, can't pay you, but.
Hey, Stu, I did listen to a show the other day. Did you see who he interviewed?
Oh, not Tobias.
No, not Tobias Forkham. No.
No.
Blackie Wallace.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That was a long interview too. It was like an hour and a half or something.
Oh, wow.
Didn't him and Blackie have a falling out, or didn't get along for years or something?
I don't think so. He said that, you know, for 10 years, he was like, well, I'll come on the show when I'm ready. Cause you know, I'm in some of these Facebook groups and they share memes about like Wasp never touring North America, stuff like that. Like they'll tour Europe, but not North America. And, but now he came on the show to announce a North American Wasp tour, which is the first one in like over 10 years, I think. So, and they're touring with Armored Saint, another band that never tours.
I've seen Armored Saint.
Yeah.
I saw them here with, they opened up for Death Angel.
Yeah. They used to tour, but they like John Bush, like stopped touring to raise his kids, but I think they're older now. So he's going back on the road.
Yeah.
But for the Texas dates, they've got Michael Schenker Group too on top of that.
Oh boy, speaking of someone who's always drunk, Michael Schenker, that'll be interesting to watch. He is batshit nuts, that guy. He's yeah. insane.
Oh, they on his podcast, he was telling stories about Michael Shanker, like, taking Chris Holmes's motorcycle and breaking the sound barrier with it in LA.
I actually watched that Chris Holmes documentary. I think I mentioned it. Mean Man.
Yeah. Oh, Eddie asked him about the allegations he made about not being paid and stuff. And yeah. Blackie was just like, we came to an agreement. He signed papers. Like, he goes,
an NDA. Yeah.
Well, he just goes, we came to an agreement and signed it. I don't know what he's talking about. And he goes, I haven't seen the movie, by the way. So,
yeah, it's just basically Chris Holmes in France with his wife just vaping and vaping. And it's just,
so instead of chugging pretend alcohol in the pool, he's chugging vape.
Oh, in,
air.
It looks like a London fog throughout that whole film. It's just him and his wife vaping everywhere, I think.
Have you heard any of the music?
Disgusting habit.
Yeah. Have you heard any of the music he's done lately?
Oh,
yeah. It's just such garbage, man.
Bad.
You know?
It's so bad.
Terrible. You know? You know, you kind of wonder why people are like, oh, we hope he gets back into Wasp. I'm like, really?
No. Because we got Kill Fuck Die out of him in 99 back in Wasp, and no thanks. That's bad. That is horrible. That's up there with Danzig 5, Black Acid Devil. What is the one?
Yeah, it's like Danzig goes, okay, I'm tired of Rick Rubin making me do this strip down stuff. I'm just going to go so far in the opposite direction. Like, it's like he went nuts. Like, not having Rick Rubin sitting cross-legged behind him, sucking down tofu dogs, telling him he can't, telling him he's got to strip that sound back, make it more raw, you know?
Can't sound like Robert Johnson. Sound like Mississippi Fred McDowell.
Yeah, that was just, I remember listening to that. I picked that thing up when it came out, and I think it was 96, that album. I had my mate in a car with me. He just looks at me about two songs and goes, what the fuck is this shit? I said, oh, this is bad.
Oh, I remember when I was getting into like Danzig and the Misfits, I noticed I couldn't find that CD anywhere. Because I was looking into his filmography and I went, oh, there's this one. And I went, I wonder what this sounds like. I didn't know anything about it. And I think I called some place that had used CDs and I went, do you have Danzig 5 Black Ass Devil? And the, I think the guy who answered the phone, he goes, why? He goes, I'm just warning you, that album's not very good.
Yeah, I found it in a used CD store pretty quick after its release. Like, I heard the song, I was living in Florida at the time, and actually heard Sacrifice, the title track, on the radio. Oh, yeah. And they were pushing it because he was ripping off Nine Inch Nails, which was the hot sound at the time.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit of Marilyn Manson as well, and I think I got that at a used CD store for like $3, which was completely unheard of for a brand new used CD, but they were trying to get rid of them.
Well, and didn't he sign with like some company that Disney was the parent company for to do that record, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it was like Hollywood Records or something.
Yeah. And I remember there was reading that some people were like, Disney signs on Satanic Rocker. Danzig, you know.
And then he was saying, look, I know more about the Bible than did you do.
I know more about that because I got my my Gnostic Gospels over here, and here's, I'm going to read you this story from this book that they don't want you to know about from the Bible.
Yeah. Yeah, Hitler's
back
werewolves.
In 10 minutes. Once I've had my French onion soup, I'll be back to read the last chapters of the Bible.
Oh, man. Danzig's bookshelf, one of the greatest treasures an artist has ever given us.
Without a doubt.
That's up there. That's up there with Chris Holmes pretending to be drunk in his pool.
If you want a real laugh, find the old Veronica comic books and look up the letters pages where Danzig responds to readers. That's the funniest stuff. Yes. It's just like, it's him trying to be like Stan Lee, except, you know.
Does he say like Excelsior or something?
Nah, he had some other thing, but he was just, I mean, he's a meathead. So, he, like, if you've ever seen him on stage, he has no idea how to banter between songs.
Oh no, he's the one time I saw him live, he was visibly pissed the whole time at something, and he was like, he was unhappy with the stage design, and he was like chucking stuff around, and they were having issues with sound the whole night because like Dez Farfara's band Devil Driver opened, and they were having some sound issue, and they had to stop the show, and Dez was arguing with the sound guy from the stage, and then Danzig was having issues, and he took his mic apart and was like making faces at them during like one of like, you know, what's his bucket? Prong's guitar. Tommy Victor. It was his guitar solo. Like he would take the mic apart and go. And then at one point he jumped off stage to like scuffle with a security guard and started yelling. It was one of the wildest shows I've ever been to. Like, oh man.
When I saw him live when it was a Danzig show, and he looked like Michael Chiklis from The Shield with spray on black hair to make it look long, because he had a clear like balding thinning hair problem on the top, and they wouldn't let anybody bring in their cell phones.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like, it was crazy because they didn't want anybody taking photos of him.
I remember this guy like deliberately tried to start something with him, going up and shooting with his cell phone, and like there's footage of Danzig like punching him, like knocking his phone out of his hand.
Just remember Danzig. The guy who knocked him out on that video is dead. So
really,
is he?
Yeah, that guy passed away.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
Danzig.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Is like that guy died. Like that's what he was most famous for.
Yeah,
Danzig put a curse on him.
He like
yeah,
and that thing
put a curse on you, motherfucker.
Yeah, that thing kind of looked like they were planning that, I think.
It looks somewhat planned. It's hard to say.
Northside Kings are undefeated. Something like
that. Yeah, it was they knew they were goading him into a fight.
Yeah.
You know, there's somebody in England right now who go, oh cool, Carry On Cowboy episode. And they're probably sitting there thinking, don't these guys edit or don't they know how to keep a straight focus on something?
No, we can't title this Carry On Midnight Movie Cowboys. So
what was it? Carry On Tangent. That's what it should be called.
Carry
this
on
one.
Tangent.
Carry On Podcast.
Yeah. Should be. But yeah, I mean there's not a great deal to say about this thing. I think it runs out of steam towards about the last 20 minutes.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I was kind of ready for it to end when it was over, you know? And I think that's, as I said earlier, there wasn't a really strong narrative to drive it. You know, it's just kind of a generic Western narrative, you know? And that's what I think was missing to make those last 20 minutes more compelling. But, yeah. But you know, it's still a funny movie. I think this series, I mean, I want to check out more entries in it. Like I want to go see that Henry VIII one. That sounds hilarious.
Yeah, that's a good one. Carry On Dick really is one of the funnier ones.
And that I was think. The last one with Sid James, as if I'm recalling correctly.
I believe so, yeah. Yeah. There is an actual Carry On TV series called Carry On Laughing, but I think it's just a compilation.
It is, it's original half hour sketches because I have the box set with all the episodes collected. And on the Carry On box set with all the movies, they have episodes of the show as like bonus features. But it's a shot on camera, like multi camera sitcom setup. But it's them in acting out stories that, you know, could only be 30 minutes. So if they run out of jokes by 15 minutes, you know, they probably shouldn't have done that story, but it's pretty decent. Like they did, yeah. I can't name, like, I mean, I don't know the stories that well that they're spoofing because I guess they're popular in British literature, but there's like Orgy and Bess would be the title of one. Just all the double entendre stuff they could get away with by British TV of the 70s. They could get away with a lot, you know, there was no real restriction on that sort of stuff. But they're okay. The jokes don't work as well on video for whatever reason. I don't. It's something about film. It's something about because the movies look like professional movies and they're doing all these cheap gags. That's what makes it funny. So when you watch the sketch comedy show, you're just watching a cheap gag show, you know, with costumes.
I'll tell you what you get your hands on if you can. I think you still might be able to get it from Amazon in the UK. Is the Carry On Christmas specials. I have those and they are hysterical.
Yeah, I like the first two.
Yeah. Well,
if we know the last two aren't that great, but the first two are pretty funny.
Well, if we know anything about the British, they love their Christmas specials.
Yeah, well, they do the Christmas Carol with Sid James as Scrooge. So
every season, a Doctor Who has to have like the Christmas invasion.
The Talic Christmas took Carol.
Here's
Steptoe and Son did it. Hancock's Half Hour did it, I believe. Love Thy Neighbor did it. They all did Christmas specials.
This week, the Cybermen learn the true meaning of Christmas.
Yeah.
Master
just tries to steal Christmas.
It doesn't mean they convert to Christianity. It just means they learn to be nice to people, like Scrooge.
Yeah. Exactly. But the interesting thing is the only place where they've actually ripped off the titles is Hong Kong, because these movies are very popular. Were very popular in Hong Kong. So you have Carry On Wise Guy with I think that had Gordon Liu in it. And it was like Warrior from Shaolin retitled. They had Carry On Pickpocket, which was directed by John Woo. They would just do direct Carry On lifts, and they probably would steal gags out of them as well. But when you watch certain Hong Kong comedies from like the 70s, there's a definite Carry On influence, especially in the Lucky Stars films in the 80s.
Do you think the Hui brothers were influenced by the Carry On films in some way?
Yeah. Yeah. They're influenced by, because if I watch them now, I'll probably see where they might have taken a Carry On gag here and there. Mm. There's definitely some aspirations there, some influence.
And since that was a colony of Great Britain, it makes sense that those would be influential there. You know?
And I kind of realized that might be why I don't like Korean movies. Because, you know, everybody loves South Korean films. Like, they're just the hippest, greatest thing. And
but, like, the thing about South Korean films is they're all, like, dark and cynical, you know?
Well, I've even tried their action comedies, and the problem is they're influenced by American movies and Hong Kong films from the 70s and 80s and, you know, all the things that we dig. The problem is they're not influenced by what influenced those guys.
Mm.
They're not going that far back. And so there's just kind of a, you know, it's been watered down too much what they're stealing from. Like, they steal from French movies and stuff, but they steal from La Femme Nikita. They're not stealing from Melville's Le Samurai or something like that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like with some of these, like one of the Korean movies I saw that was a comedy, I couldn't even get through it, was The Good, the Bad, the Weird.
Ah, that sucks.
Yeah, it was so bad. And I remember going, like, I feel like these people are just doing Quentin Tarantino, like, aesthetics with something else.
Quentin Tarantino inspired by Sergio Corbucci.
Yeah, I just remember the few of those. Like, some of the South Korean thrillers I liked, but the comedies I've tried to watch, I've just kind of, like, Good, the Bad, the Weird was like 3 hours long and it wasn't funny. And the action was kind of meh, you know, but it was, you know, it was kind of being trying. They tried to sell it as like, oh, here's the next cult film.
Isn't Old Boy Korean?
Yeah. That's South Korean.
Yeah. South Korean. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, cause right now the South Korean stuff is big, but it was big in the aughts because of Old Boy, you know.
Yeah.
And there was a big glut of South Korean movies, and that's when Good, the Bad, the Weird came out. You got stuff like The Host and Memories of Murder.
Parasite's up on the later ones.
But you know, that director who did Parasite is from that generation of filmmakers.
Right. It's Squid Game. Nobody will shut up about Squid Game.
I haven't seen it.
I watched it.
I have no interest. I just don't care.
I watched it. I enjoyed it.
You did. Did you now? Yeah. Did you now, Bert?
I did.
All right. Is it like Battle Royale? Is it similar to Battle Royale or no?
It is. It's not like people running around killing each other. They play these games, and like children's games, like playground games. And if you lose, you die. But it was compelling. Like, you know, it just, you know, it kept my interest.
So they took an Outer Limits episode concept, stretched it out into an entire series.
100%. Okay. Absolutely. Right. It's nothing new. It's nothing innovative. But I thought the characters were well done. I thought, and it held my attention. It's that binge model where you go, oh, you know, I want to see what happens. But, you know.
Each episode ends on a cliffhanger. Somebody important dies.
You know, I know they're going to do a second season. I have no idea how they
I'm not. I don't really want them to do it because I've no.
Do they do any Taekwondo or Hapkido, Hunter? That might be fun.
No, that like no, not, no Taekwondo or Hapkido. There's
not even exploiting Korean martial arts in their in their exploitation product.
No,
weird.
And it was also quite funny too. Like there was some good dark humor in there. But no, I enjoyed it. It wasn't it wasn't a waste of time. Wasn't Tiger King,
Right. Was that a waste of time? I didn't even see that.
I saw the first episode and I went, I don't need to see anymore. I get it.
Yeah, it looks like that sort of thing.
All right. Well, we got any more to say about Carry On Cowboy?
All right. I think we're done. You want to rate this thing?
Yeah.
All right, Stu, what do you give it? This is...
I'm going to give it a 6.5. I think I had more of a love for it before again watching it today. Not to say I disliked it. It just did start to run a bit thin towards the end. And really, we're talking about the television show, which was not really a TV show, but this could have been trimmed down. Sometimes Carry On films could have been trimmed down to a 30-minute TV show.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an interesting experiment to take this film and cut it down to 30 minutes. You could probably do it.
Oh, yeah. You could.
Like you take that, you take Carry On Henry. Some of the later ones could be cut down to 30 minutes. I mean, even some of the earlier ones, maybe. They're the ones I watch the least, like Carry On Teacher, Carry On Constable, Carry On Cabby, etc.
They hadn't really found Carry On Jack yet.
No, they hadn't. They were still feeling their way through things and getting cast members because they had Leslie Phillips, who was in some of the early ones and disappeared in the later ones because he's good, but he didn't suit the Carry On crew. They got a different writer. So yeah, it'll change. But yeah, I'll give it a 6.5. I'll say it's worth a watch. I would say, honestly, that Carry On box set that you can get from the UK is pretty cheap with all the 30 movies.
Oh.
The That's Carry On documentary from 78 with Kenneth Williams and Barbara Windsor hosting it. And the TV shows are scattered. So you get a lot in there. And the films, I believe a lot of them come with audio commentaries as well. This one has got an audio commentary by Angela Douglas on there. So it's good to have the commentaries that we've got because these guys and girls are not getting any younger. We've lost nearly all of them. Angela Douglas is she's now 80. Jim Dale's now in his mid-80s. So, we're down to the last few. And after that, they're all gone. And yeah. And a lot of them actually had a lot of problems offset. Sid James had his chronic gambling. Charles Hawtrey was a manic depressive with alcohol problems. Kenneth Williams was depressive with problems, taking pills, etc. Joan Sims, who played Belle in this film, she became an alcoholic and died. And so, yeah, a lot of sort of personal problems with not all, but a lot of the main cast from these movies.
I notice a pattern: British people drinking too much. Are you sure they're British?
So Australians, we're all part of the Commonwealth.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you Yanks have got that as well. With your tailgate parties and shit.
Yeah.
And your spring break.
That's right.
Yeah.
So John, what do you give?
I give it, I give it a 6.5. I think the first hour of it is really funny. And I was like, man, this might be the best Western spoof ever. But then that last 20 minutes or so, it's got a whole, let's get this over with. We're out of jokes. Let's see what we could do. If they don't really do much with it, it's a little disappointing, but I enjoyed it. It's always good to watch one of these every few months and kind of be reminded what inspired a lot more people than they admit. Recently I watched a Q&A with Pete Rogers, the creative producer of this series. And they asked him why he never paid these actors that much. He never paid them more than like £5,000 or something for the roles.
All we got was scale pipe. Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, well, because once you, once you like pay an artist too much, they're intolerable because they're just awful people. Because I don't know why anybody listens to artists. They're absolutely ridiculous people.
Well, and then it becomes, to his point, the series probably would not have been as prolific.
Right. And it's a job. It's like you go in, you act, you do this, and you're done. You know, you're not saving the whales, saving the earth, whatever the hell.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like you don't need more money. And it's just like, you know, it's a job. Treat it like a job.
Well, and it's kind of like, it's kind of reminds me of, Jackie Chan was sitting around going, I'm ready to do Rush Hour 3. Just give me the call.
Yeah.
Show up. But it took them like 10 plus years to make Rush, which was a bad movie. You know, nobody wanted Rush Hour 3 with Roman Polanski. But, you know, the reason it took so long to make that movie was Chris Tucker wanted more money. Chris Tucker didn't do a single film in between Rush Hour 2 and 3. He just was sitting around going, hey, man, I want more money. You know,
he's on the Epstein flight logs quite a bit.
Really?
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I didn't think that. I always thought Chris Tucker was gay.
So did I.
Hmm.
Always did. Mm. Especially after Fifth Element.
Yeah. You 100%.
And who's to say he wasn't? If you know what I mean. Mm. You know. Mm. Who says Epstein wasn't appealing to that particular, thing?
Who knows? But just getting back to what you were saying about how to them it was just a job. It was because they wouldn't go off and do endless promotion and TV interviews and trek the globe. You know, they would do it, piss off, get their money, go do a TV show or another movie or a stage play. They were always doing something. They weren't sitting around waiting for the next Carry On film because who knows when that will come. So they would just keep working. And basically they'd do it, forget it, and move on. And okay, we'll do another Carry On. Yep, who's on board? Yeah, you know, these days it's all about promotion and getting on doing breakfast morning show interviews and blog interviews. I mean, who cares? You know, everyone knows the friggin' movie's out. And movies wouldn't take so much of a goddamn hit if they weren't spending millions on promotion. If they were spending 2 or 3 instead of 50 or 60 million, that's insane.
Well, they've gotten to a point where they have to make $300 million to make a profit. It'd be some crappy comedy that somehow costs $100 million to make or something. It's just like the Judd Apatow comedy, Funny People. It costs like $60 million.
And it's 3 hours long.
And it's shot in some guy's house in his backyard. And it's a $60 million movie.
Ridiculous. You could have taken, if somebody was, look, I'm not a financial guru, but if someone had taken, right, we're only spending $20 million on promotion, what if we spend 4, take the other 16 million and we get 8 filmmakers and give them 8 new up and coming filmmakers, give them $2 million each, go ahead, make a film. You got 8 films to play with to see if you can make more money.
So you mean what the Grindhouse Weinstein movie should have been?
Exactly.
Instead of being over bloated, expensive, made to look.
Why couldn't you get Freddie Williamson on board for that? Why couldn't you gotten Jim Brown on board? So look, time to change. It was 20 years later before they were doing this one to other Grindhouse, or 30 years later. But man, just do this, get it in, and you can do it on the cheap. You know, Larry Cohen was doing those things on the cheap with the blaxploitation stuff in the 70s. So why not get him as a sort of advisor of some sort? Don't get advice from Weinstein and Rodriguez and Tarantino. They're just going to blow money out the water.
Yeah.
And look, that took a bath in the end, mm-hmm. financially.
So John,
really enjoy it. Don't get me wrong, shit, but yeah, it lost money hand over fist.
So John, did you give a rating?
Yeah, 6.5. Same as 10.
For me, I'd give it a 6. I thought it was good comedy, maybe wore out its welcome, didn't keep momentum, but I liked it enough to go, you know, seek out some other ones in the series.
Go check out Carry On Screaming next. That's probably the best one because that is the Carry On's love letter to Hammer horrors of the 60s. It's great.
Yeah,
no, see James, he's not in it, but It has Kenneth Williams and what's it, Fenella Fielding as the crazy brother and sister who run the haunted house. It's great. It's so much fun. And it looks great too. Really well filmed. Beautifully shot movie. Dive into the sort of bawdier ones like Carry On Camping and Girls. And
I'm keen to see the Henry and Cleo ones too.
I'll put it this way, Hunter. It's like the Zatoichi series. There's not what you would call great movies in there, but there are a lot. It's very consistent and mostly good ones.
Yeah.
That's the best way to look at it.
Every time I see a Zatoichi movie, I go, yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah. That's pretty much what a Carry On film. Oh, that was good. That was funny. That was good. I laughed.
Okay. I'll watch another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of, in a way, that's ideal, you know.
Carry On Henry is funnier than Carry On Cleo. Carry On Cleo is fine.
I'm just interested in what they did with the Cleopatra sets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'd be an interesting
one. It'll probably be the next one I watch. I'm going to watch Carry On Henry as well. I've never seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No, I've only seen Carry On Cleo in like a pan and scan videotape version. So I've always wanted to see like a widescreen. And then Carry On Henry, I've never seen. It didn't get bootlegged around here in the double O's. Some American labels would have bootlegs of British PAL tapes, and you know, they were pretty bad looking.
Carry On Dick is funny too.
I now
remember it. It is very funny. Yeah. I'm going to watch another one tonight, actually. One of those later ones. Carry On Girls is the most insane one because it's literally just a beauty pageant of 20, 25 women in a hotel run by Sid James. So you know it's going to be full on. And
Yeah, that one's pretty funny. I watched that one on the set. Yeah. That was like the first one I watched on the set. I think Stu recommended it.
Carry On Girls? Yeah.
Yeah. I said, hey, I got the Carry On set. You were like, oh, watch Carry On Girls.
Yeah. Yeah. I might go that one tonight, I think. Let's see. Seems I'm off work sick. I might look sick, but I'm not feeling too good.
All right. Yes. So, you know, let us know what you think of the Carry On films if you check them out. You know, let us know. Hit us up on the Discord or in the comments here or on Facebook, you know, wherever.
Had you even heard of the Carry On series until this?
Are you familiar with it? What do you think? If you checked it out because of the show, let us know. Yeah. Like, comment, and subscribe.
Yes.
Yeah. So, anything else before we go, guys?
I am doing an appearance sometime soon on Watch This Movie. They've asked me to go over there.
Cool.
To do Crocodile Dundee, and I'm just...
Good.
I told Eric, I said, I really don't want to watch that movie again, but...
I'm glad you're doing it for him. Take one for the team.
And then he goes, John gave it a 4-star review. I said, John's just trolling. He goes, no, he's serious. He really liked it. I thought, what? I still believe John's trolling. It's no way.
No, I give 4-star. Watch it with the family. Because I bought the double feature DVD for like $6 off Amazon or whatever. So I was like, okay, I'll get it. I just want to see the first one. I hate Crocodile Dundee 2. I tried watching Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles. I said, I remember I did like the first one when I saw it in a theater. And we watched it with the family and we really enjoyed it. Because it's a fascinating look at what people thought New York was back then. And it's back to being today, a city of junkies, pimps, whores, queers, it's like this very negative Abel Ferreira type view of New York.
So it's basically that Manitoba's Wild Kingdom song.
Yeah, it's the dictator song, New York, New York.
Also, everybody, I forgot to mention, I'd like to welcome the newest member of the MMC, Travis Bickle, to the group.
Speaking of New York, I'm probably going to be on Low Res again soon.
Nice.
I'll let the audience know whenever that drops.
Doing a Jack Nicholson retrospective, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we're going to look at the phenomenon of mumblecore films in the aughts, you know.
Hans, you're from Mumbleland. What do you think?
Hans, you're in the Philippines. What do you think?
Mumblecore. What was it? Oh, those. Yeah.
Stu,
Open Five.
Open Five. Yeah, that's one I'm going to bring up. You know, like the, you know, Joe Swanberg, Kentucker Adley, they're very similar to those British kitchen sink dramas, you know,
the Mike Lees,
but they're just more millennial, you know. So
yeah.
So yeah, we're going to talk about that kind of spate of movies that kind of began with Joe Swanberg and people like that, and kind of ended I think that ended with Lena Dunham. I think like stuff like Tiny Furniture, that's when those people started getting careers, and that sort of ecosystem died. But
that's when you need that Karnak the Magnificent, on the was it Johnny Carson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tiny Furniture, something Lena Dunham can't sit on.
Sim Salabim. All right. Anyway. All right, guys. Well, if there's nothing else, I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
All right. Peace out.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.